All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Monday. That's Mondays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Sandy, it's about a year for the Ukraine and Russia war. And it hardly seems, you know, I remember when all of these tanks and other things were at the border of Ukraine.
Well, I think a year ago at this time, we were speculating about whether or not Putin would invade.
Right.
He had encircled Ukraine with troops. There had been a period where clearly there could be negotiations. Putin was sending pretty clear signals what he wanted. He wanted the Crimea annexation recognized. He wanted the government of Ukraine essentially modified so that it was not anti-Russian and not so terribly pro-Western. He wanted to make sure that Ukraine didn't become a site for NATO bases and become a member of NATO. And he wanted a disposition of the Donbas region, which was, and the Donbas and Crimea had been historically, and by that I mean in the big history of things, prior to 1954, had been part of Russia and had all been part of the Soviet Union. And so, you know, and then 4 days later, and on the 24th, the invasion started. Apparently, Zelensky had stonewalled the negotiations, and Putin decided that he could not tolerate the introduction, for instance, into Ukraine of a military base, whether or not it entered NATO or not. And a fair part of that reaction appears to have come out of something which was, if not a secret, not publicized at all, which was on November 10th of 2021, Blinken, on behalf of the United States, signed a strategic charter agreement. That's what it was called. I had occasion this weekend to read the full text of it. And that agreement looks every way like a treaty. It's the United States announcing that we will protect Ukraine's sovereign. It essentially states that we're there with Ukraine. We've got their back. It worded like a treaty. Treaties are supposed to be ratified by the U.S. Senate. A treaty isn't a treaty unless it's ratified. But we had decided instead to enter into this thing, strategic charter agreement with Ukraine, that wasn't a private document, was something that Putin certainly knew about, and it basically said that we would invite Ukraine's introduction into NATO, and that furthermore we would protect its geography, its sovereignty. It had some interesting, unusual things in it too, things that I can't figure out why we would be interested in. It worries me. Things like the fact that Ukraine agreed to privatize its energy industry, meaning its oil and gas industry. Why did we care about that? The document was curious in my mind, and I think it reflected the fact that the United States has had for a decade now a disproportionate interest in Ukraine and the ongoing dealings in Ukraine. And I fear that if we carried out an investigation, we'd find out that activities in Washington, active lobbying on behalf of the interest in Ukraine, had affected both the Republican and the Democratic parties and had brought Ukraine to the fore in a manner that did not reflect, in fact, the hard interests of the United States, the real politic.
So let me ask you, Sandy. So there's NATO. And NATO, all of these different nations organize together, and they do things collectively. They're not unilateral decisions made by many of the...
Well, NATO has a... You can't enter NATO without every country in NATO agreeing to it. There's a blackball, and everyone knew. Germany was saying privately, and other countries were saying, we don't think that we would want Ukraine in NATO because it isn't a matter of our vital national interest.
So let me go back to what you said, that the United States apparently made some kind of agreement with Ukraine without running that past NATO.
Well, I don't know who they ran it past. All I know is they didn't get the U.S. Senate to ratify it. It wasn't the subject of discussion publicly in the United States. it was an agreement with Ukraine, which probably had in some respects a precipitating influence on the invasion by Russia, because it increased the level of threat that NATO or NATO-like military activities would occur in Ukraine. And you have to look at the history of this region. I think historians are going to look back 40 and 50 years from now and shake their heads. It will be a sorry history. I think that the neocons that were represented by the likes of Paul Wolfowitz grabbed a hold of U.S. foreign policy at the time of the fall of the Soviet Union. And there is, in fact, intercepted communications by Wolfowitz and others in which the United States was saying privately that its policy was going to be, after the fall of the Soviet Union, that the United States would tamp down and would stamp down any potential rival in the world, and that it was going to be in our interest to have America be dominant across the world. We couldn't really take that position during the period of the Soviet Union because we had this bilateral Cold War situation, and we had to respect the views of Russia and Communist China, because they were powerful nations and we were acceding to it. But since then, we've got this neocon theory that's been prevails to this day, I think, which is that we must flex our muscle and we must demonstrate our might so that we are dominant and there is no competing force in the world, which is an unsustainable objective.
So this is why the American people need to be made aware of what our foreign policy is and our foreign policy objectives. And I know that people may say we don't need to know, but it's critically important that we know, because then we won't wind up in situations like we're in now, where the American people don't even know what's going on.
We're backing our country into a corner. I mean, we can feel like we're backing the rest of the world into a corner with our sort of bully pulpit and our expansive international affairs and our spreading of weapons and power. But what we should recognize that in many respects we're backing ourselves into a corner. It's kind of the same kind of the corner in a much small. The Soviet Union did to itself with Afghanistan, exhausting itself with that foreign adventure. We will quickly exhaust ourselves if we get into full-blown foreign adventures with proxy wars against China in Taiwan and Russia in Ukraine. Which could suck the life out of the country. And we better analyze up front why it is we'd be doing it. Because if we're only doing it to maintain mercantile economic dominance, then we should recognize that's an unsustainable objective in the long run.
So, Sandy, unfortunately, the American people don't realize the magnitude. You know, people celebrated the ending of the Cold War. Those of us who had been around a while and live with that threat of nuclear holocaust celebrated and thought that was coming to an end. Excuse me. But clearly we're painting ourselves into that kind of a picture.
Well, you know, in a way the world sort of celebrated. The people of Russia, whose economy absolutely collapsed after perestroika, were not celebrating. But the Russian government, Yeltsin, for instance, came forward and talked about Russia becoming a member of NATO. It was openly discussed and privately discussed. Putin even discussed it briefly after he became the head of the Russian government. There was a period when there could have been kind of a world peace with respect to this and a fully integrated world economy that could have included Russia, which would have included China. China is clearly an integrated part of the world economy. Russia is not as integrated at this point and is more subject to being separated, and the sanctions ever since 2014 have partitioned Russia off. But it wasn't necessarily going to be like this until 2004, when we brought in a whole bunch of parts of the old USSR into NATO, and we began to talk very expansively about NATO, and we began to stonewall Russia with respect to its involvement either in the EU or in NATO. And so we began to treat Russia like an enemy, and they, of course, began to view us then as an enemy.
You know, Sandy, and I remember the celebration when Russia broke up, the USSR broke up, and the fact that we were left as the lone superpower, and that apparently went to the heads of many in this country, and now you look at the danger, the inherent danger that we are in. China has now been kind of forced into a partnership with Russia. We certainly, as the United States of America, are more powerful individually than Russia and China. But if we put Russia and China together, that's a major problem for our nation, again, because people who don't understand this and fail to understand we only make up 4% of the population. The sheer manpower with Russia and China together, not to mention their military might, that's a major issue. Why would we want to run headlong into that sin?
Well, and we
why are we doing that?
Well, and we tell ourselves we do this because of the war between democracy and other forms of government, but we should be examining that more closely. What is the form of government that we find unacceptable that causes us to believe that we ought to risk our treasure and our blood on behalf of the people who are facing that government, when some countries have decided based on their culture and their history to organize themselves in certain fashions, and they probably would not tolerate well organizing themselves in the same fashion that we in America have decided to organize our culture.
So when we come back, we're going to continue the conversation. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. What are your thoughts about the fact that Russia and China appear to be at some point in time looking to join forces, and the fact that we as the United States of America think that we have the power to tell China what they should and cannot do? 844-967-2789. It's Monday. That's Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Monday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Our phone lines are open. You know, Sandy, and now, it's enough of dealing with Russia. That's, you know, at some point in time, that's going to escalate. And then at the same time, we're thumbing our nose at Taiwan at China, and we want to let them know we're still in charge. What are we in charge of? What is it about our country that we somehow think we're in charge of the world? We're not.
Well, that's why I...
And it's okay.
Well, that's why I was startled to reread this. There were these leaked information that related to the Paul Wolfowitz and others of the neocon who were hatching a policy which was, in fact, adopted by sort of mainstream State Department policies in the United States and our public political foreign affairs, that we were to be the dominant country, and we were going to make sure that we had no competitive superpower in the world. We were going to tamp down our competition. And when you listen to it that way, you realize that a lot of that has to do with economic power. And so China has had a resurgence, not a resurgence, a new surgence of economic power to the point where it's clearly on a trajectory to pass our economy at some point. And this has us apparently quaking, number one. Number two, it has us flexing our muscles. And I was saying off the air, you know, I'm trying to find a colloquial that explains what real politic means. And Henry Kissinger's version of real politic was, is it really important enough to you that you're going to be willing to invest your blood and treasure to the hilt over this issue? If it is, then you'll go to the mat about it, you'll flex your muscle about it, and you'll actually do something about it. But the number of issues we have like that and the number of places in the world that we have like that are quite limited, okay? And the colloquially I was using is, you're in a bar, and the guy next to you is drinking Schlitz, and you drink Pabst, and you, as far as you're concerned, anyone who drinks Schlitz is a bad guy. And so you decide to pick a fight with him to try and make him drink your kind of beer. And he's big enough and strong enough, and he's going to break your nose, and possibly you're going to lose some teeth if you get into this. The only reason you'd do it is if you were crazy. It wouldn't make sense. On the other hand, if he's threatening your daughter, you're going to go no matter what. No matter right. his size, scale, you're going to invest everything in it. Well, our foreign affairs should have those kind of measuring rods associated with it. And we should understand that, number one, we are a fortress based on the Atlantic and Pacific. We are not going to be invaded by anyone. So any of our interests that are going to drive us to war are going to involve foreign involvements. And they're going to involve foreign involvements that better be very important to us. And something as for like Taiwan, where we have waffled, where we recognize that Taiwan is fundamentally a part of China, where we've adopted congressional actions that reflect that, where we've refused to recognize them as a nation or even back them having teams in the Olympics, should tell us something about our willingness to invest all of our treasure and blood there, and we should back off from taunting and provoking issues with China over it. Similarly with Ukraine, okay? And we fail to recognize the interest of these other countries, because you know what? These other countries, they have daughters too, and they are going to worry about the things that are important to them.
All right, Kevin from Waukesha, thank you very much for waiting. Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
I have a question concerning the long-term projections over in Ukraine. I don't feel that anybody's addressing this, or else they're keeping it under their hat. The long-term projection of this war, where is it going? You know, we supply them with weapons and ammunition, along with a bunch of other countries, and I understand that, you know. But are we going to let Russia just trample this country completely and then take it over? Or is there a line in the sand that we're going to draw and say, okay, you know, you can't destroy this country and just walk over it, you know, because where are they going to go next?
So let me ask you, Kevin, would you be in favor of us going to war with Russia in that case, sending American troops in?
You know, it becomes, I know what you're saying, because, you know, you're putting an awful lot on the table there.
Well,
know,
that's
the
what's
world,
on the table.
That, right now.
Well, but that's what's on the table.
And here, Kevin, is my
problem. I'm beginning to think that we're almost at a point where somebody needs to go in there and push back, per se.
Who is somebody? Who is the somebody? The United States.
Well, I think it's kind of the United Nations. I think.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
I mean, push back.
I think push the troops back into Russia and say, okay, these are the lines. This is a sovereign country. You need to respect that.
Sandy?
Well, the UN was envisioned, I think, at some point as being that kind of an international policeman, but it hasn't ever exercised that role. And unfortunately, the United States has undertaken it. But, you know, the situation in Ukraine, you know, what would we do if China was installing military bases in Mexico? And Mexico was agreeing that they were going to allow China to have their submarine bases on both the Pacific and Atlantic shores.
We wouldn't allow it.
And they were going to install military bases with missiles in Mexico. What would our reaction to that be? Don't you think we would, number one, pull all this? We would put economic embargoes on Mexico. We would flex every kind of muscle we could imagine to try and make Mexico change its mind. But if they didn't change their mind, what do you think we would do?
All right, we've got to go to a break, Kevin. Thank you very much for the call. I really appreciate it. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams in the war room. U.S. warnings to China on arms aid for Russia's war portend global rifts. Secretary of State Anthony J. Blinken says Washington has indications that Beijing is strongly considering giving military aid to Moscow for the war in Ukraine. Let me ask you, Sandy. So Beijing decides we want to give some weapons to Russia. And now we get into our feelings as the United States and we say, no. You can't do that. We don't want you to do that. If you do that, you're going to anger us. I'm like, what? Why would China be fearful? A sovereign nation that has its own autonomy. Listen to our nation telling them what to do. I mean, where does that make sense to you?
Well, like I was saying off the air, if we were actually at war with Russia and China decided to form an alliance with Russia and to become a major supplier to Russia, then maybe we would be at war with China too. But we aren't at war with Russia directly. We've, in fact, made it very clear that we aren't at war with Russia. We aren't going to be sending troops to Ukraine or aircraft or the things that would seem to put us at war with Russia. We're simply selling stuff or giving stuff to Ukraine so they can fight a war with Russia. It's called a proxy war. And so China would be, I guess, on the other side of this proxy war. And it might make us feel not as cozy about China, but our ability or our willingness to risk at least national treasure in terms of sanctioning or otherwise creating economic tensions between China and the United States over this is probably nil, okay? And we're going to rattle our swords, but are we going to do something about this? I would guess not. And I would guess China knows not. And I would guess this is a situation a bit more like don't drink Schlitz beer, or I'm going to punch you in the nose kind of a thing, then it is fighting over...
So saber rattling.
It's saber rattling. But the problem with the United States is that we've gotten into this practice of saber rattling in any and all directions, and we've really stopped this neocon form of foreign policy has stopped having us evaluate our real interests. You know, it's true. Russia invaded Ukraine and violated international law in light of doing that. So Russia is, on a legalistic standpoint, a bad guy. The United States, you know, invaded Vietnam. The United States invaded Afghanistan. The United States and Iraq. We've then in a variety of wars, we can justify it to ourselves because we can look at our national interest. We don't even look at our national safety as much as we look at our national interest. Our national interest was to do it. Well, guess what? Russia says to itself, our national interest was to do this with Ukraine, and that the Ukraine posed an existential threat to Russia. The threat that Russia would describe to itself with respect to Ukraine was far greater in terms of existentialism than were the threats of Iraq, Afghanistan, Vietnam to the United States. And so, you know, we have to be careful about how we paint people who are aggressors, because the fact is that over the last 80 years, the United States has been quite an aggressive country.
You know, Sandy, it's the Soviet Union, and as we were watching the dismantling of the Soviet Union, you know, I never will forget the fact that Russia was quiet for a while. It was kind of licking its own wounds, and we were clearly testing our wings. You know, we're sending threats to Iran. You can't do this. We're sending threats to major nations that we are telling them what they can and what they cannot do. Because we kind of got drunk with power, right? After the USSR collapsed, we really did get drunk with power.
Well, and we conduct black ops all over the world that we don't even know about. It.
Right.
SEAL teams are busily doing things, and we don't know about most of them, the things they're doing in countries that we are not at war with.
Yemen. Yemen's a prime example.
Yeah, Yemen, and
right.
And other areas in the Middle East and Africa, where we have been active in a sub rosa kind of a way, sub rosa meaning covert.
Right.
And so, you know, this is all part of this neocon outlook of America's might and the flexing of American muscle. You know, the neocon theory was America has all this muscle, we ought to be using it. Okay, it's part of the trap that Eisenhower warned about. I watched his valedictory speech again, his last speech as his presidency, when he warned of the dangers of the military-industrial complex and how it might affect our foreign policies, how it might affect the way we treat the world, the way we spend our money, the level of priorities we have in our country. He was very prescient, very, very, he saw the future quite clearly about what was going to happen, and yet no one listened. We still don't listen. And here was a man who was in a very good position to evaluate it. He came from the military, was president for two terms, and was at the very cusp of the post-war transition from wartime military, which we built up from almost nothing that we had before World War II, into a peacetime military that is huge and expensive.
You know, Sandy, the American people really need to understand what is transpiring, where we are, and what we are faced with, and what the future is going to hold if we continue down the path that we are headed down. Now, they may not want to hear what it is that you and I are saying, but clearly we're sounding an alarm for what is on the horizon. And let's do this. CJ, quickly, I don't want to hear about what Joe Biden did. We're talking about where we are right now.
About peace through strength and trust but verify. You maybe don't.
Those are cliches, man. Those are nothing. CJ, those are nothing. That's only cliches.
Governor Ron DeSantis. Okay.
That's all you're talking about.
Governor Ron DeSantis had a speech yesterday that spoke of how we got where we are today. You don't want to hear it.
No, I don't want to hear.
That's fine.
I don't want to hear what Ron DeSantis.
We are where we are, right, Earl? Who's the president today? You want to talk about?
Hey, CJ, this didn't just happen because of George Bush. Why can't you get that? I mean, because of Joe Biden. Why can't you get that through your head? Sandy and I are talking about decades of different presidents, both Democrats and Republicans, who have brought us to the precipice. And you can't see that because you are caught and blinded by Joe Biden. This is bigger than any Joe Biden.
You say I was blinded by Donald Trump. I'm not. This mere fact that all this happened when I was president, period. You can blame it on Trump, but it didn't happen
under Trump. Didn't you hear me say it's been decades in the making? Can't you? And which includes many other presidents?
But it didn't happen.
It was in the process of happening.
Under this president.
Well, CJ, I'm sure I'm in a minority. I'm sure I'm in a very small minority in this country, and that's what worries me, because we have developed a foreign policy that's like a political third rail. We can't talk about it. We can't talk about what our national interests are or really should be. We can't seem to talk about how we should prioritize the expenditures of the American federal government and prioritize them with all of the various interests of the American people. We don't seem to talk about how it is we evaluate what the America's national interest really is. And I blame the current president at least as much as all the prior presidents for the very, I think, incorrect approach we've taken to world affairs. I believe that our approach has been provocative. I think that we exercised might we had as a result of the accident of the being the only economy standing after World War II, and then being the only military power of international proportion after the fall of the Soviet Union in 1991, until the rebuild that has occurred of Russia and the buildup of China in its economy. But the world is evolving, and the situation today is very much different than the situation was in 1980. In 1980, China was a third world country. In 1980, we had a detente and a Cold War with Russia, and we had Russia that was slowly imploding based on the problems internal to Russia, including corruption and a military expenditure that was unsustainable, the size of their economy. You know, actually, that last ingredient is something that I fear America is putting itself in the place of right now. So, I'm not really interested in talking about whether Joe Biden Donald Trump is at fault or was a savior of the current situation. This current situation is the buildup of decades of what I would call stinking thinking.
Well, Earl and Sandy, you had a guest on named Scott Wheeler. Did you watch his documentary?
No, I didn't watch his documentary. Why would I want to watch it?
You should. You should. Because Sandy and him went round and around. The problem is, Sandy, China believes we're in a Cold War. The problem is Russia believes this president is weak and moved on Ukraine. So it didn't happen under a prior president. You can all of a sudden say, well, this was years and presidents in the making, but Putin didn't move on other presidents. He moved after the failures in Afghanistan, and you want to keep saying that.
So, CJ, we don't need to be repetitive every day with you on the same thing. Again, when NATO, as Sandy explained, decided to put a ring around Russia, which is basically what we're talking about. That's what this is about. And if you don't understand that, then, you know, if you think this is clearly about Democrat and Republican, then, you know, maybe you and I and Sandy should stop having the dialogue and the conversation about it, because people get frustrated with hearing the same thing in the same conversation all of the time. We are beyond that. Joe Biden, Donald Trump foolishness. This is bigger than that, man. Don't you understand that? This is bigger than just pointing the finger. Well, he was weak. Joe Biden is weak. It's a much, much bigger.
Well, actually, I would say that the whole concept of the military might of America keeping the peace in the world is part of the mistake. And, we need to have our military might to use for the real interests of America. But the idea that we can police the world in all of its parts is for all kinds of indignities and problems goes beyond our capacity.
All right, got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be back. All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at the same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy. And you know, Sandy, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, man, that I can't come in and talk about what's the best apple pie recipe. That's just not important to me. And what is important is if the American people can't sense that we're in a perilous time, just because they don't want to hear it or don't feel like hearing it doesn't mean that we're not there, right? I mean,
no, absolutely. And you know, the fact is that America we treat military excursions like adventures. And you know, they used to call them that under the Teddy Roosevelt period. They were military adventures. And the fact is that the next war, that if we ever get involved in a real war, the next war with someone who is our match, from the standpoint of technical. Capacity and military capacity, we'll find out what it feels like. We'll experience war on our shores. For instance, our infrastructure. You know, if we end up fighting a war that takes the war to Russia, we can expect to find our electric infrastructure in the United States under direct assault. There'll be all forms of cyber warfare that could incapacitate us. And we don't have to have troops on the ground in the United States to experience warfare in quite an awful manner. And if we do end up with troops, which is obviously a logistical nightmare for anyone, but in today's world, you know, it's not just balloons that China has the capacity, right? And so, you know, we ought to be far more careful about, number one, how we flex our muscle, who we provoke, who we identify as our enemy, so that, you know, we don't go to war over what kind of beer they drink. And I'm not saying that the Ukrainian invasion is that trivial, but what is something we should have recognized is that we were provoking a situation in Ukraine, much like we would be provoked if a similar situation was being carried out in Mexico.
Let's go to Stephen in Green Bay. Hey, good morning, Stephen. Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Good morning, Earl. I was just listening to CJ's input on the whole Ukraine thing, and I've heard him on this program and others make comments similar to the one he made today about, you know, it's Biden's fault. And I think if that's your dialogue on the situation, you're really missing the bigger picture. To say that Russia was not planning on doing something like this for a while, I think is just ignorance. And I don't really think that Russia was sitting back and saying, oh, well, Joe Biden's president of the United States, so now I'm going to go attack Ukraine. So, I mean, a lot of people think like CJ does, unfortunately, but I just don't think it's based in reality.
Hey, Stephen, man, thank you very much for the call. I really appreciate it. You know, Sandy, again, we don't know what it's like to have our cities bombed. And we pray that we never do, right? But if there was ever a time that you don't want to be at war, it's in 2023 when the weaponry is absolutely, you know, the kind of weapons that would just completely wipe out cities. That's what we're talking about. Why would you want to even think about getting engaged in something like that?
Well, it doesn't take a nuclear weapon to wipe out cities. You can look at Bakhmut. You can. The problem I see is that we stood by and the situation arose, which ended up involving the invasion of Ukraine. That the complexity of why that happened is far more complicated than just a good guy, bad guy scenario, and it involved a 30-year history following the breakup of the Soviet Union and a series of dealings between NATO, the United States, Russia, and that region, and in particular some of the idiosyncrasies and oddities of Ukraine, including its extreme corruption. So my problem is that post hoc, we can look at this and say there's a good guy and there's a bad guy. Well, Russia did violate international law by invading Ukraine, and now it's easy to look at David versus Goliath and look at it in that context. But the United States needs to be very careful about, one, the situations that we might participate in provoking, and number two, what we do about the situation once it occurs. Because there can be little question that our conduct with respect to Taiwan is provocative vis-a-vis China. And I don't think anyone in our Congress or any of the listening audience wouldn't agree that the United States' conduct about Taiwan is intended to wave a bit of a red flag at China and say, don't you dare do anything with Taiwan, even though we all know that China asserts and the world basically recognizes that Taiwan is a part of China.
You know, Sandy, as a young boy, one of my favorite actors was John Wayne.
Oh.
And he wasn't real, right?
No, he wasn't even in the Army.
Okay,
he avoided the military during World War II and then made macho war movies almost every decade after that, True Grit.
So John Wayne was not real. So we fell in love with that John Wayne type of reality. And he gave, and so for the United States, like you said, all Army movies, all those other movies, it was that tough guy, John Wayne. That's not what we need. Not today. We need to be as far away from that kind of thinking as anything can be, Sandy. Diplomacy. Whatever happened to diplomacy?
Yeah, well, real diplomacy and diplomacy that, you know, unfortunately, the United States needs to be very pragmatic in its approach to the world, and it should not be either bombastic, and we shouldn't have a grandiose view of ourselves that is no longer reflective of the reality in the world. The notion that we can stop China from becoming our economic equivalent is the equivalent of throwing our body in front of a freight train and telling it to stop. China is on a trajectory to be our economic equivalent. And we better figure out how we're going to deal with that. And the way we shouldn't try to deal with
that is militarily.
Is militarily.
Yeah. All right, well said, Sandy. Thank you very much, my friend. I don't know what happened to the time. Got to go. We'll be back on tomorrow. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you later.
Ooh, it's a grooving situation and a splendid combination. You're something that